Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here is your remedy in the law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, our advice to you would be, get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do where they similarly situated to you. However thoughtful and experienced and educated as these opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are just that. They're just people's opinions. And it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and we'll see those two items. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. On the left is the Jurisdictionary course. That's your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American Jurisprudence, or AMJUR. It is the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you might find yourself in. On the right is the common law default, mostly known for its national 85% win rate in traffic cases of the country. That's usually what it's procured for, is traffic. But that's not so much relevant why we really have it up here. The reason it's up here is once you've gone through Jurisdictionary a couple times, then you get into the common law default, you'll see very quickly that it acts as a real-life homework assignment. Most of the key structures that you learned about in Jurisdictionary, the core pillars, if you will, are now being acted out in a real-life scenario with the common law default. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The Jurisdictionary at $250, the common law default at $150. And so we hope you to pick those up at your earliest convenience. If we back out to the homepage, now we see the login and register again. That prompts us to remind you to set yourself up with an online account at Your Remedy, at your convenience. That gives you full access to the site, all of the wonderful features that are within that site. And of course, you get your phone number and PIN for every single call every night. So you have full access to everything that you can have with the calls. Of course, you get virtually unlimited interaction with the information provider come question and answer time. And, of course, you've got archives to go through. You've got years and years and years of archives, a vast wealth of knowledge and archives that you can go through. And, that, of course, that's also very affordably priced at just a very small $10 a month. You can do that automatic through your credit card or PayPal, whatever you prefer. And so that takes care of you on that. If that's not an option for you just yet, then you do have Freedoms Radio, www.freedomsradio.com. That is 100% free to use, Freedoms Radio. And every call, every evening is broadcasted live on Freedoms Radio. There's no archives, but you don't have to miss a call again if you don't wish. And you even got a little question bar where you can type in a question or a comment each evening. So you don't get the type of interaction that you get by being on the call, but you can type in your question, your comment, and still have some limited interaction with the information provider. All right, so on to the next subject. You might have noticed on every website that we have now that map of the United States. That is Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. That is a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level, based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially how it works is you've got a very user-friendly install wizard. Put your name in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then you'll have at some point a list of topics. Choose as many of these topics that you like, whatever your interests are. They range from home foreclosure prevention to IRS matters, credit card issues, health rights, veterans rights, on and on, whatever you can think of, you'll find it in there. And then it's going to ask you finally, what radius are we looking at, citywide, countywide, statewide, hence the previous name there. And when it's all said and done, the idea is to put you in, to put people in communication with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Kind of a mock scenario is, you know, you get on there one day and you say, well, this happened to me today. A few people get on there and say, well, I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. That's what's wrong with this country, so on and so forth. And as truthful and honest as that might be, I don't know how much that's going to help you in your education. Maybe the next person says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse, go to the law library. By the way, if you didn't know, every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library, free of the taxpayer. And I'd look up these terms and see what the definitions are. That would be a good starting point. And then I'd watch this YouTube video. Well, now you're starting to get somewhere. Maybe somebody else next few people down says, well, I'll tell you, I would go to this particular website. Maybe your remedy is in the law, for example. And I'd look at this particular educational package. Well, you see what's happening here now. So that's all we're trying to get folks to do is just start communicating once again. And once you've learned how to do this and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters, I don't have to tell most of you there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to get folks to do here with Grassfire Communications is just simply start talking again. And that is also 100% free to use, Grassfire Communications. So, also, you might have noticed every time you visit your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up that asks if you want to continue on or stay and check out America's Restoring America. That is there just simply to remind you to explore. Too often we hear, I wish I had known about this, or I wish I'd heard about that before. And so we put that there to remind folks that there's lots of other stuff that you might have missed. And so at your leisure to check that out as well. All right, this next portion we like to call your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with an information provider. Now, these information providers pay for advertising at your remedy, and that would be an expense as well as any other expenses that might be associated with your particular scenario or whatever process that you're looking into. So that brings us to an even more finite point. What is the refund or the credit policy like at your remedy? Well, there is none. You know, if that was a conversation that needed to be had, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. And even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. Again, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. And again, if you have a question on whether we might have an information provider that might be able to assist you with your particular situation, you can get a hold of us directly. You can contact me, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. You can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250, and somebody will usually be back with you very, very shortly. All right, lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers on these calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, do you have anything you want to add, Mr. Edward, or should we go right into our speaker for this evening?
You caught me by surprise. I had myself muted and wasn't planning on saying anything. No, go ahead and introduce our speaker, please.
All right. And I'll go ahead and excuse myself here. And so without further ado, folks, it is my pleasure to turn the call over this time to the speaker for the evening. Here is Brother John.
Good evening, Michael and Martin. Thank you for your kind and gracious introductions. Tonight we're going to talk about nationality, and we're going to cover the source of nationality. And to that end, any of you who are near your computer would like so to follow along with us, I would like you to consider the possibility of calling in and asking, or actually at this juncture, emailing Michael and asking him for a copy of two documents. There's one of them is a constitution with highlights, and the other is a copy of 2 U.S.C. 1502. And for any of you who would like to follow, I encourage you to either on your computer do a search for 2 U.S.C. 1502 and or pull up one of the a good copy of the Constitution, or email Michael right now while I'm chatting, and ask Michael for tonight's handouts for class. Okay, and he has two handouts. One of them, as I said, was the Constitution that has some highlights on it, different colored highlights for specific reasons. It's got yellow and green and orange, just some modest highlights. But the other is, actually it's 8 U.S.C. 1502. Excuse me. I said 2 a little bit ago. It's 8 U.S.C. 1502. And to that end, if you email Michael for the handouts, he'll send them to you. And to get with that, we're going to get started. And the Constitution is a very special and precious document. The first three articles of the Constitution, one is regarding all the legislative powers of the Congress and the Senate, and for the Senate and the House of Representatives. The second regards the all of the articles regarding the President of the United States. Article 3 is all of the related judicial guidelines, rules, and regulations, and that which establishes their authority of the judiciary. And then there's Articles 4 through 7 that take care of other miscellaneous housekeeping on setting up and running this government we call the United States of America. And we're going to start in the first one and we're going to make out just some observations, okay? So those of you who have a constitution handy, and when hopefully many of you are emailing Michael at currently and asking for the handouts, Michael, could I ask you to chime in, as it were, and give everybody the email address that you would like that request sent you to address, okay?
Yeah. The people on this call already have my email address, and they also have my cell phone, either way. If for whatever reason you do not have my email or my cell phone, then you simply call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250, and I'll be more than happy to reach out to you and get what you need back to you.
Well, Michael, I'd like you to give the email address right now so that they can email you.
I don't publicize.
The
people on the call, every one of them, I'm looking at them here. They have my emails.
Okay, good. So for those of you who want the handouts, please email Michael right now as we're speaking so that he can be sending it out to you. These handouts are important for you to be able to sort out and point out your own nationality, but more so, what's going to happen is that we've got some homework to do that we would like everyone on this call to do that we're going to ask you to do before quitting time. And to do the homework, you have to have these documents. It's very important. And the thing is that especially for those of you who have gone through the trouble of getting with the State Department and having the errors in their computer regarding your status corrected. Once again, for those of you who have gone through the trouble of getting with GW and Michael and getting the errors in your the computer corrected, okay? Michael, just real quick, on a rough scan, what percentage of this evening's class has their status bought current? You think half of the classes are status current, or just looking at just off the top of your head, just a rough guesstimate? So we have a reasonable idea of the people we're speaking to.
Three of the people on the call have corrected their status already.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Okay, as we commence this evening, study, we're going to start in Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution, and it says, it points out that the House of Representatives should be composed of members chosen by every second year by the people of the several states and the electors in each state. It's pointing out that the several states is a unique group, and as we go through Section 2, Paragraph 3, representatives should direct tax show a portion among the several states which may be included in this union. And what they're doing is they're identifying that the several states at this juncture are who the U.S. government serves. Okay? The when we now go to Section 8, the paragraph 3, it says to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes, okay, and to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, uniform laws and bankruptcy throughout the United States, and it goes on to some other responsibilities. Now, and then in paragraph 12, it says, to be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states, respectively. And in paragraph 13, it says, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may be by session of particular states by acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise authority of all places purchased by consent of the legislature of the state from which the same shall be. They're talking about Washington, D.C., District of Columbia, the 10 miles square, and all over the territories and held possessions, Guam, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. But they're saying that the United States exercises exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square. We're talking about the District of Columbia here. These are the attributes of and the relationship between the United States and the several states. And then when we go to Section 10, Paragraph 2, it says, no state shall without the consent of Congress. So there are two completely separate entities. We have the states and we have Congress. And it brings that up twice in Article 10 in Paragraph 2 and Paragraph 3. Now, in Article 2, it talks about this is everything that addresses the president. It goes through and covers a handful of housekeeping that are items that are related to that. But let's jump forward to Article 4, Section 4. The first sentence, the United States shall guarantee to every state in the Union a Republican form of government. Once again, we're defining the attributes of the United States, not the corporation that hadn't been formed yet, but the attributes of the entity and that entity's responsibility. And it's indicating here that there are two completely separate entities. It says, very specifically says, United States, and this one is an upper and lower, it's not all caps, so they're not talking about the corporation. The corporation didn't exist at this time. We're going to get around to dealing with the corporation in a little bit. Okay. That one is very, very important. The United States shall guarantee a Republican form of government to all of the several states. And let's see here. Moving forward to the amendments. When we're looking at the amendments, there's a housekeeping note that says in the Seventh Amendment, and this is the one place where you find common law. It says, in suits of common law where the value of controversy shall exceed $20, the right to jury trial shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall otherwise be reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. So, for the folks, we'll talk about where that comes in just a little bit. Article 9, or Amendment 9, says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. This is indicating that there are rights that are retained by the people that are superior to the Constitution and pre-existing the Constitution. And Articles of Confederation and Declaration of Independence both pre-exist or precede the Constitution. Now, through the evening, through this discussion, from time to time, I am at this time going to invite Mr. Michael Edwards, whenever you deem fit, to contribute. Okay, Michael? Are we okay with that? Because we're going to be dealing with American nationals in a little bit. You okay with that?
Sure. I'm sitting here with a bated breath.
Okay, and keep your mic unmuted. Okay, the 10th Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution. Okay, so it's saying the United States, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectfully or to the people. The 10th Amendment clearly, as many of the other notes that we've identified, clearly, specifically identifies that there is a delineation and a difference between the United States and the several states. Okay, so the thing that's very, very important is that we don't lose sight of that. That is extremely, extremely important. Now, we're going to go to United States Code 8 U.S.C. 1502. It's a really, really long half a paragraph. It could take up almost a third of a page, the code. But I'm gonna has anybody emailed you yet asking for copies of that, Michael?
Two have already asked for it. I've already forwarded.
Okay. Please, 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 anybody and everybody that's on this call, this is the antithesis of the call tonight, is 8 U.S.C. 1502. Very, very, very important, okay? I'm going to go ahead and read this through, and then we're going to, and I'm just going to read it through, and we're not going to have any discussion on it yet, but I'm going to read a couple of other statutes to you, like 26 U.S.C. 6203 and 7203, okay? But here is 8 U.S.C. 1502, Certificate of Nationality issued by the Secretary of the State for persons not a naturalized citizen of the United States and for proceedings of a foreign state. Now, Michael, real quick, as candid as can be, where does it say that the several states are foreign states?
A number of places. Also in the U.S. Code, I don't have it off the top of my head, but the one I'm most familiar with is what Jennifer Sue brought to my attention several years ago, where Alaska was brought into the Union and they needed to finance to pay for an additional federal judge to come in to assist in that. And in the language of the statute that they modified in Title 28 or wherever it was, they refer to the several Union states as countries.
Thank you. That's one of many. If you had a couple of the United States Code references that you could pull up, please feel free to interject if you find those. Okay, I'm going to read 8 U.S.C. 1502. The Secretary of State is authorized to issue in his discretion and in accordance with the rules and regulations prescribed by him a certificate of nationality for any person not a naturalized citizen of the United States who presents satisfactory evidence that he is an American national. Whoa, heavy alert. This is saying that there are people that are American nationals, okay? Now, we're going to get further into this in a little bit, but and that such certificate is needed to use in judicial or administrative proceedings in a foreign state. Such certificate shall be solely for the use of the case for which it was issued and shall be transmitted to the by the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels to the judicial or administrative officers of the foreign state in which it is to be used. Okay. Another place where we seem to have a lot of fun that many of us get into challenge after challenge after challenge seems to be code that we find ourselves dealing with that requires and compels individuals to pay income tax. And with that, we're going to start out with 26 U.S.C. 7203. And that is the willful failure to file a return, supply information, or pay tax. For those of you who are sitting in front of your computers, and I'll give you a moment to do so, I'm going to ask, please look up, just do a search engine on 26 U.S.C. 7203. Now, when it pulls up, one of the first two that will be there will be the LLI, Legal Information Institute, Cornell Law. That's 26 U.S.C. 7203. And if you're on a smartphone or something like that, you may have to put your smartphone on speakerphone to be able to look this up. I apologize. I'm going to jump around to some titles, and I want you to save if you have the providence to be on your computer this evening. I'm going to ask you to save bookmark these or to print and save them to a PDF file for your reference, okay? Once again, that's 26 U.S.C. 7203, and one of the first ones to come up will be the Cornell Law, LLI, Legal Information Institute. By the way, They, the Legal Information Institute is self-funded, paraphrased, on donations only. They do not have a budget from Cornell Law that, to support them. The Legal Information Institute, the branch of Cornell Law, is funded by you and I, our donations. Sometimes I'll get an email and I'll send them $10 or $100 or just whatever I have available at the time because I use them a lot. I have had LexisNexis and West and these other previously. Short of doing case law study, this is one of the best legal references that you can get to. 26 U.S.C. 7203. And the first three words, any person required, under this title, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's extremely, extremely important. Any person required, indicating that not all persons are required to file a 1040, okay? Then this is brutally, brutally important because when you're addressing the issue of who is, who's not, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is supposed to be paying taxes. This is one of those things where you do the show cause motion to the court, and that you, this is the statute you use to ask the IRS to show cause that you are, in fact, and they need to prove that you are a taxpayer. And when they say, well, they're U.S. citizen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's like, whoops, holy kitty litter, Batman. That may not be completely correct. It's very, 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 very critical. Under 8 U.S.C. 1102, the title is diplomatic and semi-diplomatic immunities. Okay. There, at these junctures here, is when we want to take a look at, the fact that, certain individuals, have extra rights or that are because they are technically have diplomatic status as an American national. U.S. versus Slater, 545, it says, unless the defendant can prove he is not a citizen of the United States, the IRS has the right to inquire and determine tax liability. And in section 8 U.S.C. 1101, A21, the definition of national comes up. And what's very, very important here is when we're looking at 8 U.S.C. 1101, it's the issue comes up that it says, and this is A21, small A21. The term national means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state. That's an American national, okay? That is not to the United States government, okay? When we're looking at the situation regarding condition of an individual or a national, it says, or a defendant, it says, unless the defendant can prove he is not a citizen of the United States, the IRS has the right to inquire and determine tax liability. Well, if If we're a national, then we do not have citizenship in the United States per se. Now, there's 1101A22 says, national of the United States means a citizen of the United States or a person whom through which was not a citizen of the United States but owes permanent allegiance to the United States. Okay? Though not a citizen but owes permanent allegiance. Okay? At this juncture, you needing to know and can be able to confirm your status, and the fact that you've got it correct in the computer. Let's go back to 8 U.S.C. 1502. It says the certificate of nationality issued by the Secretary of State for the person not being a naturalized citizen of the United States for use in proceedings with a foreign state. Okay. Now we're going to start to get into the homework for this week, okay? And next week, most of the call is going to be interactive, where we have everybody being able to raise, after about the first 25 minutes, everybody's going to be able to raise their hand and talk next week. I've got a phone number for you. All eyes up, ears open, and pencils on paper. Ready? Area code 202-647-4000. This is area code 202-647-4000. Now, what are we going to do with that number? Wait a minute, John, who is that? Oh, hold it, John. That's a 202 prefix. That's D.C. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely correct. That's the U.S. Department of State, and that is, and you will press option number 4 once it answers. And then I would like each and every one of you, when I'm doing research, a lot of times I try to I find out that when I ask a specific question of government agencies, their answer, like anybody else, you would try to tailor your answer to the person's needs, and you miss out on a lot of idiosyncrasies. And sometimes because I've asked a dumb question, they say, well, wait a minute, that's not the question you should be asking. This is the question you should be asking, and this is the information you should be looking for, and you should be looking in that place. And it's like, whoa, really? Did they just serve me up on a platter, a delicious judicial bite or nugget of chunk of meat there, or gold? Yeah, they did. And so we're all going to help each other on this one. And what we're going to do is I'm not going to stop. Or I'm not going to continue to give you more information on the specifics there, but I would like you, each and every one of you, sometime in the next day or two, couple of days. Remember, earlier in the day you have less hold times, you know. And I call back regularly to find out things that I need to learn. Okay, this one, what I want you to do is call up 202-647-4000, and then with the copy of USC 1502 in your hot little hand or on your screen there, say, I need a certificate of nationality issued by the Secretary of State under United States Code 8 USC 1502. Is this something you can help me with, or is there somebody else I need to talk to? Okay, and now note down here it says shall be transmitted by the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels to the judicial or administrative officers of the foreign state to which it's being used. Michael, when they were negotiating Seward's Folly, Alaskan Purchase, what did they call the other states?
Countries.
Yes. Does that qualify as a foreign state?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So what happens is that if you live in, say, the state of confusion, state of California, I grew up there, so I can easily get away with that. For a while, I had a magnetic sign that had a picture of a bear snarling and growling, and it looked like the California state seal, and said, state of confusion for official abuse only. And it was a magnetic sign. It was me. After about the fifth time we were stopped, and the constabulary asked us to not portray it anymore, we didn't. But this was back in the 70s. And of all things, I was working for the Defense Department at the time. So I was getting myself in double trouble. If you're a resident of the state of California and they are charging you with filing a 540, and anyone who has either lived in California or knows somebody who lives in California may or should be familiar with the 540. It's the California version of the IRS 1040, okay? But if you have a current traffic ticket, what you want to do is put down the case in the judiciary, note and have ready the contact information, the snail mail and email information for the clerk of the court where you have your traffic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then what we want you to do is ask them to have one issued and confirm your status as an American national. And there's three of you on this call that are American nationals. But the rest of you, I want you to call and confirm, what is the procedure for getting this done, and who do I talk to, get all the contact information. The three of you who are already American nationals, I want you to do whatever it takes to come up with one of those issues there. Could judiciary, administrative office, or of the foreign state, in this state case, if you're New York or whatever, and the state income tax, et cetera, that we want you to, especially if you have a case currently going, we want you to work on the experiment or the actual activity, and we're helping you out with this activity right now. Get that certificate issued, okay? And what you do is you say, can you also send a copy to this snail mail or email address for me for my personal reference, okay, so that you get a copy of this. And it's very important for the three of you that have your status corrected that you ask for a courtesy copy to your own email, okay? And let us know the moment you get a response on this. And next week, we're going to talk about the responses you got on the phone and with the clerk there. Now, our friend at Selection 4 at the Passport or the State Department there, Bureau, so be it. The information that she'll give us, she's going to refer us to. I'm not going to go any farther on that one. Do what it takes and make notes on everything that is brought up to you so that you can bring back to the class next week what you learned in your specific event. Now, if you have something really tectonically exciting happen, please call Michael immediately, and he will set up. If I'm not able to take personal time with you right that moment, he'll arrange an appointment, and we will get that covered. And for those of you who do that, although I may ask you to speak yourself at next week, I'll attempt to share your findings for you. What I may do is just introduce you by sharing some of your findings and asking you to exponentiate. So, very, very important. We have homework, okay? And the homework is 8 U.S.C. 1502. We want you to go find this out, okay? Now, we're going to start having homework at different levels, especially for those of you who are having some trouble with the IRS, okay? In some of the ensuing classes, we're going to talk about some homework that we're going to see if we can get you headed in the right direction on these, okay? So at this juncture, the thing is very, very important is that you you start to be prepared for homework, okay? So for this evening, I'm just about out of time here. On the saga of Mr. T, we're going to use this, we're using this currently, this to punctuate his status with judiciary that's in the gavel that's involved in this situation. Because he's been assigned a public defender, and the judge refuses to accept anything, and in fact he's sternly instructed the court not to accept anything from him directly or anybody else, but only through this public defender. So at this juncture, what we're going to do is we're going to educate with a letter and a motion and a brief the public defender, who is a hardcore 44-year practicing attorney, that he and I took our bar exams within two. He took his 2 years after I took mine. Only difference is I did not invest. And so we're about the same age, and he is very much encrusted in the traditional and legal practices. And to that end, when we brought up constitutional issues, he says, but that's not what's going to happen in this court. Or he says, that was overturned by the Supreme Court, you know, and I realized that he's, how can you have a provision of the Constitution superseded by the Supreme Court? And at this particular juncture, I realized that when I brought up the fact that when we were looking, and I quoted to him the Constitution itself directly, and when I quoted him the Fourth Amendment, you know, that no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by an oath of affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the person and things to be seized. And he says, well, there's expediency, there's a whole bunch of things, premising. He says that they can actually do a search without a warrant. And he called the Louisiana law that deprives an individual of their rights the inventory search. He says the car wasn't inventoried yet, or the car was being inventoried. Why is it being inventoried? Well, the police are afraid that somebody's going to accuse them of stealing, because there have been officers who felt a little bad about how little was in their paycheck and felt they deserved more. And to do, you know, to that end, they attempted to augment their income. And so what's happening is that they stole. But so officers stealing from cars gives them the right to deprive them of gives them the authority to deprive them of their right of obtaining a search warrant before they search and seize And the fact that that type of inventory is a John Doe search and seizure, meaning that they didn't ask for anything particularly described or et cetera. And to this end, this attorney is so wonderful that he believes that a judge can supersede the Constitution. Hello, what is wrong with this picture? You know, and what's happening is that we're going to try to carefully, with respect and dignity, educate him on the fact that there's no way to alienate somebody from their inalienable rights. That's just not possible, and it's definitely not legal. And so, part of what's happening here is that just like you, or just like Mr. T, having to educate the judiciary, not just the judiciary, but the fact that Mr. T made some mistakes and boxed himself into a corner with his status of representing himself, now has a public pretender who can just throw him away at will. We've now got to educate the public pretender the public defender and the judge. And what this means is that we're going to have to educate the public defender to the point where he slaps his chin and says, wow, this is so way wrong. I've got to put a motion before the judge. Okay? And in doing so, we're going to start to work at winning over these individuals, one individual at a time, and we're going to be restoring liberty to America, one attorney and one judge at a time. And so what's critically prime importance is that you and I and all of our fellow persons that are especially that are on this call tonight slowly begin to do our due diligence so that we understand what is and isn't our rights, and that we know how to explain it to a judiciary as candidly and succinctly as possible so that they understand an individual's rights and that they slap their chin and they say, wow, what this guy is saying is right. I've made an error here. And so what's extremely important is that we educate ourselves. And so tonight, the homework that is there, I would very, very much like each of you to sometime in the next day or two, couple days, for those of you who already have your status corrected, I would like you to, if you have a situation going, whether it's a traffic ticket or anything, ask for them to see what it would take to obtain the certificate, and can you get a courtesy copy for yourself? For those of you who do not have your status corrected, inquire and find out what the procedure is and what they require to obtain a certificate of nationality. And I'm going to wrap up a little early tonight so that we can have more time for question and answers. I have a conference call that I have to be on a little bit later on, so I won't be able to run too much late oil on this. But if you your question and answers can stay to the subject matter topic, that would be greatly appreciated. If you're not able to, or you have some other topic that is weighing on your heart, you're not limited from sharing that. You aren't required to save the topic, subject matter topic. With that, back to you, Martin and Michael. Hello. Did I lose you guys?
No, you haven't. I'm checking. Oh, it's just D and me. I don't know what happened. All right, so first to raise their hand is Miss Jennifer. Hello?
Hello.
Good evening, Jennifer Chu.
I just wanted to say one day I was looking for how to contact the Department of State, and I came across a website, U.S. Department of Homeland Security, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, National Records Center. So I just thought I would, because online I could request the records under my name. So I did that, and recently, October 12th actually, I received a letter that says, it's short, so it won't take too long. This letter is in response to your request for records under the Freedom of Information Act or Privacy Act, which was received in this office September 11th, 2023. The Freedom of Information Act and Privacy Act require federal agencies to make their records promptly available upon receipt of a request. Note, Privacy Act rights are limited to U.S. citizens or permanent residents. Although your request was submitted as a FOIA or PA request, it is not covered by either of these acts. The records you have requested are unrelated to USCIS and not under the purview of USCIS. So that's telling me I'm not a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident.
Jennifer, now did you get that via snail mail?
Yes.
Can you scan that and forward a copy to Michael, please?
I think I did a while ago when I got it, but I will do it again. Not a problem.
Okay. I would very much like to see that. They, we need to see that.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's that they refuse to say I'm an American national, but they're telling me that I am by telling me I'm not a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident anymore. That's the way I read it.
Yeah.
But I will certainly send it to you.
We would like to look at that so we can modify that request so that they state specifically what the challenge is.
Okay. No problem. I'll get it to you tonight.
Thank you. That's very kind of you, Jennifer. Okay.
And
back to you, Michael.
I'll definitely call the U.S. State Department tomorrow, too. Thanks,
Cole. Michael, back to you, sir.
All righty. Thank you so very much. Next on our call list today is Ron in Cocoa, Florida. Go ahead, Ron.
Yes. I'm on a chat room, and I was just informed that all flights have been grounded. Do you have any confirmation or interest?
Now, there was a little bit of a difficulty today, a little bit of an eruption with the FAA's computer system, and they were grounded for about an hour and a half this morning, or some places it was over 3 hours. I think in Honolulu it was 4 hours. But actually, wait a minute. This would have been yesterday morning. They were grounded, and they were trying to figure out if they got hacked or if they had a bug. They had an accident and a mistake. But that's the official story. Off topic. There was somebody suggested that somebody did hack the FAA RTCC air route traffic control system, and it took them a while to get control of the system back. That's the off the record story. Does that help you at all?
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Back to you, Michael.
All righty. Thank you so very much. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad, and I'll be happy to unmute your phone while you're thinking about pressing star 2 once more on your keypad. I am checking Freedom's Radio to see if anybody has raised their hands there or asked questions. Let me just double-check here real quick. Stand by. Refresh again just to make sure. Clear the buffers. Oh, that's it. Brother John, that concludes tonight's call. I want to thank you so much. Any parting comments?
Yes. When two stand together, it's hard to stand against them, but a threefold cord is not easily broken. If we stand together, all of us, side by side, in an ongoing effort to restore liberty to America, there's a lot that we can do. And educating our fellow person is the most critically prime important issue. If people know what's right and know how to get to it, that reduces the bloodshed and the pain immensely. You know, if people get so educated that they turn around and they say, wait a minute, what I've been doing is wrong. We've got to change this drastically. That's quite a kudos in my eyes for the person sharing the education. It's an honor and a privilege to stand beside all of you in trying to educate our fellow person to restore liberty to America. Now, Michael has some announcements about them on ice speaker. Thank you,
sure.
Michael.
Thank you so much, sir. Tomorrow night, please join us for Mr. Slevin, and he will be talking about, of course, his LLC. It is a most unique type of LLC. And I should mention that Brother John and another member of his family have purchased these, have acquired these to utilize the benefits of them. And you might want to consider being on tomorrow night's call to actually see how and why it's such a benefit. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.